The NBC Radio Network celebrates its first Fabulous 50.
Howdy! I'm
Silver! Hi-ho, everybody.
Good evening, Mr. First Lieutenant.
Good evening, Mr. and Mr. North American. All the ships at sea, let's go to press.
Where?
The only thing we have to fear.
Ladies and gentlemen, easy aces.
We are resolved to destroy Hitler.
Henry Aldrich.
Mr. Chairman.
You were expecting maybe Emperor Shapiro Hito.
Everybody awake! Let the word go forth.
Ignition. Lift off.
I have a dream.
Hello, Linden.
How mortifying.
Blown like a butterfly.
Sting like a bee.
Let me make one point clear.
NBC Radio, America's first network, presents highlights from its first 50 years. 5 one-hour shows with hosts Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, Arlene Francis, John Chancellor, and Ben Grauer. Brought to you in part by Alice Chalmers. The world needs more of what Alice Chalmers makes. By the premium wines of Ernest and Julio Gallo. And by Delta, the airline run by professionals. Delta is ready when you are. Your host this hour, Bob Hope.
Yes, this is Bob NBC. That's NBC for Night Before Christmas, because I feel like Santa Claus with a sack of supersounds to hang on your radio antenna, Hope. Bringing back our second decade when NBC Radio really came of age. And I'm sure that when this hour's over, you'll be singing Thanks for the Memory right along with me. At our 10th birthday celebration in 1936, the general, the man who started it all, David Sarnoff, summed it up in one short sentence.
In 10 years, radio broadcasting has grown from an exotic novelty to a daily necessity.
How right he was. And the daily quota began for NBC listeners at breakfast time with this program from Chicago.
Presenting America's favorite, the NBC Breakfast Club with Don McNeil.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning to you. We woke up bright and early to howdy do ya. The coffee's on, the fruit, the toast, the bacon, and the skillet, and Everett Mitchell is nuts.
I remember that at some point in the proceedings, Don would invite his listeners to march around their breakfast tables. And all across America, folks actually got up and circled their bacon and eggs while the band played. I don't know if it did the digestion any good, but it got the day off to a cheerful start. Later in the day, there were soap operas, of course. Mom wept. The kids, they weren't interested in such mushy grown-up stuff. You couldn't drag them away from the radio, however, when the King of the West galloped into earshot every afternoon.
I'm Silver!
A fiery horse with the speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty Hi-Yo Silver! The Lone Ranger!
And then there was
Renfro! Renfro of the Mountain!
Then many other shows to keep those junior-sized pulses pounding. Then in the evenings, programs the whole family could enjoy together.
I love to spend each Sunday with you.
Eddie Cantor was our man on Sundays. I had my show on Tuesdays. On another evening, my co-traveler from those Road to Everywhere movies, Bing Crosby, hosted his variety show, The Kraft Music Hall. And Fred Allen, Jack Benny, Rudy Valley all had their own shows. And we used to trade visits, make guest appearances on each other's show.
Thank you very much, Eddie. Say, Bob.
Yes, sir.
I was on your program Tuesday night, and now you're on my show. You know, we make a great team, Bob and Eddie.
Yeah, hope and hopeless.
I was kidding, of course. Eddie was anything but hopeless when it came to performing.
Oh, Eddie, how do you feel?
Well, I've got a cold, my tonsils are enlarged, I'm running a temperature, I've got stabbing pains in my head, my back hurts me, but knock on wood, I still have my health.
Yes, you could count on NBC to keep you entertained, and you could also count on us for the latest news. On May 6, 1937.
Lakehurst, New Jersey.
The German dirigible Hindenburg is on fire. It is reported that the entire ship is involved. The Hindenburg had been...
What actually was happening was described at the scene by reporter Herbert Morrison.
The back motors of the ship are just holding it just enough to keep it from... It burst into flames. Get it started. It's rising terrible. Oh, my. Get out of the way, please. It's burning, bursting into flames and it's falling on the mooring fast and all the folks between them. This is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. Oh, four or 500 feet into the sky. It's a terrific crash, ladies and gentlemen. The smoke and the flames now. And the frame is crashing to the ground, not quite to the mooring mast. Oh, the humanity and all the fans.
Well, our sympathy went out to the victims of the tragedy involving that German airship. But only a year later, we cheered like mad when a German prize fighter was practically pulverized at Yankee Stadium. Clem McCarthy was at ringside.
Donovan is watching carefully. Lewis measured him. Right to the body, a left hook to the jaw, and Schmeling is down. The count is 5, 6, 7... 8, the men are in the ring. The fight is over on a technical knockout.
Joe Lewis not only knocked out Max Schmeling, but flattened Adolf Hitler's racist theory of Aryan supremacy. A timeout now. Meet you back in the late 30s again shortly.
The first Fabulous 50 will continue right after this. Now back to the first Fabulous 50... with Bob Hope.
Back in 1938, an Englishman with a rolled-up umbrella, Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain, returned from Munich waving a piece of paper and said, "Peace in our time." And most of the world gave a big sigh of relief. The following June, King George VI and his wife paid us a visit. NBC Radio broadcast a special program in honor of the royal pair, with dramatic bits by notable British performers who were here at that time, and an incredible musical performance by the distinguished actors Nigel Bruce, Sir Cedric Hardwick, and C. Aubrey Smith.
Down in the meadow, in a little bitty pool, swam three little fishes and a mamma fishy too. "Swim," said the mamma fishy, "swim if you can." And they swam all over the dam. Boop, boop, dittum, dottum, wattum, shoo. Boop, boop, dittum, dottum, wattum, shoo. Boop, boop, dittum, dottum, wattum, shoo. And they swam, all over the dam. Boop, boop, dittum, dottum, wattum, shoo. Boop, boop, dittum, dottum, wattum, shoo. Boop, boop, dittum, dottum, wattum, shoo. And they swam,
and they swam, right over the dam.
Well, I don't know whether they should have gotten the Victoria Cross for that performance or a firing squad, but it did prove that the English sense of humor was alive and kicking. Then to close the program, the grand old man of American theater, George M. Cohan.
May I propose a toast to the health of His Majesty King George VI. The men and women of the American theater join their English cousins in a salute to their fine young king, their lovely queen. Bon voyage, Your Majesties. God bless you both.
And back to Britain the king and queen went, but it was only 10 weeks later that this voice was heard from Germany, with NBC's Max Jordan translating the key words.
From now on, bomb will be met by bomb.
Then on September the 1st, 1939...
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this broadcast for some last-minute bulletins. Warsaw. The Foreign Office said today that German planes had bombed Krakow and Katowice in southwestern Poland. Military operations.
And finally, on Sunday, the 3rd, after an ultimatum demanding that the Germans agree to end the hostilities, British Prime Minister Chamberlain broadcast to his nation and to the world.
I have to tell you now that no such undertaking has been received, and that consequently, this country is at war with Germany.
I personally was on the Queen Mary crossing from Southampton to New York when this was announced. And I went down into the salon on this Sunday morning, and everybody on that boat was in the salon praying and crying. And I was supposed to do a ship's concert. And I told the captain, I said, "There's no way I can do a ship's concert with the people in this condition." He said, "It might be the best time in the world to do it." And I went on and did that show that night.
And I opened up with a very broad joke about the woman that was standing on the corner in London with her dress up over her hat. And a fella said, "Lady, you're getting your legs all wet." She says, "I don't care. My legs are 50 years old, but the hat's brand new." And they laughed at that. They seemed to want the broad humor. They wanted something to make them forget what had just happened. World War II had begun. From our NBC correspondents in Europe, we got continuing reports of the Nazis' victorious march through Europe. First Poland, then Belgium, Holland, France, followed by the British evacuation from Dunkirk. Then in June 1940, Winston Churchill began to rally his people.
"Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty. And so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour."
And old Winnie was right. The Nazis' air blitz of Britain began. Terror bombing of London, Liverpool, Coventry, and many other cities. But the British took it all and fought back. NBC newsmen stayed on the job too, and on one occasion hung a microphone outside the studio while they were on the air so we could hear an actual air raid in progress.
"This is London at about 23 minutes past 1 o'clock. Fred Bates speaking. London is now having its 25th successive night raid. Lord Wilton appealed to coffee stores. The cards had used to sell coffee and meat pies to night workers and people just out at night to reopen their businesses as a help in feeding the homeless. The minister promised that the coffee store orders would be given gasoline, food, and air raid shelters.
Here at home, we rooted for the British, of course, and lively music like that of the Andrews Sisters helped speed up production of aircraft and armaments in factories that pipe radio programs to their workers. But life was pretty much the same as usual. Still, even the usual sometimes turns out to be unusual and funny. You'll hear, back in Arfamoe or so. I was born in England, you know.
More from NBC's first 50 years after this. NBC's first Fabulous 50 continues. Once again, Bob Hope.
While the war in Europe went on, in 1940, NBC went to Philadelphia for the Republican convention, where a political newcomer, Wendell Willkie, pulled a big upset and got the nomination. And his rooters and the gallery went wild. Unfortunately for Wendell, cheers don't count in an election, only votes. So FDR was reelected for an unprecedented third term. In the non-political world, the public's choice included NBC's great slate of musical programs. Toscanini and the NBC Symphony headed the classical section, of course. And in the popular music department, there was this one, for example.
"My Georgia Melody, a Georgia song identifying a 2-year series of broadcasts from WSB, whose call letters mean Welcome South, Brother, tonight initiates a nationwide NBC program. It originates amid the magnificence of the Atlanta Junior League Costume Ball, forerunning the world premiere of the screen version of the historic novel Gone with the Wind, written by Atlanta's modest genius, Margaret Mitchell. I present the Dean of American Broadcasters, Lambdin Kay, the little colonel of the oldest radio station in Dixie."
"Good evening. I'm honored with the assignment of introducing our master of ceremonies on this NBC program, the cherished chancellor of NBC's College of Musical Knowledge, Professor Kay Kaiser. Welcome, South Kaiser."
"Evening, folks. Hi-yo. Well, chillin', here's a sight to behold, one that could never be put in words, and I'm not even gonna try. We've got lots to tell you later on, but right now, come on, chillin', let's dance.
Oh, Johnny, how you can love.
Yes, dance, chillin'," he said, and they did. Country music got a better than fair shake, too, at the Grand Ole Opry.
Here's Charlie Walker.
"Only you could steal my heart away from me. Only you could win my..."
Sounds like she stepped on a snake. Barefoot.
You could make me love you like I do. Only you, only you, only you.
And there were other kinds of musical shows. Fred Waring's Pennsylvanians, The Telephone Hour, The Voice of Firestone, which all seemed to have one thing in common. Tenors who specialized in high notes.
My heart sings to you. That kiss will live in my heart. When you were my whole world of love, of love.
I had a tenor on my show, too. He could not only hit high notes, but could shatter glass.
And the dawn comes up like thunder out of China. Grass. Everybody awake! And the bass.
Oh, he's beautiful. Jerry Colonna, what a talent. And he could deliver a punchline with the best, too.
Hello, Hope. I'm calling you from Canada.
From Canada? Why are you talking so loud?
No telephone.
Boy, we had great times in those shows. And there were more to come. It's time for the mid-hour recess now, but instead of the usual NBC chimes, we thought you'd be interested in the chimes we used on special occasions during the war years. Newsman Don Goddard talked about them at the time.
The fourth chime rings only when news is breaking of world importance. When it rings, all of us at NBC spring into action, wherever we may be. The fourth chime means to us, call the office. Get down here. Big things are happening.
And since something very special will be happening shortly when I return with more of NBC's first Fabulous 50, I'll leave you with two words, Bob Hope and four chimes.
Now, NBC continues its first Fabulous 50. Once again, your host, Bob Hope.
Hey, remember how Jimmy Durante used to say, I got a million of them? He was talking about jokes. Well, we got a million, too, of memories on NBC Radio. On September the 14th, 1940, President Roosevelt's fellow Americans listened to this broadcast with more than just passing interest.
The first number drawn by the Secretary of War is serial number 158.
That scream came from the mother of one of the young men whose number was picked, which made him eligible for the first peacetime draft. And I guess some of those 158s, those who got 1A ratings in their physicals, were among the servicemen we entertained later on. What a way to get an audience. Anyway, aside from the draft, life went on much as before. All you had to do was join Fred Allen for a stroll down his alley.
Somebody, I say, somebody now.
Yes, I know.
Claghorn's the name, Senator Claghorn.
I know. You're from Dixie.
When I eat crackers in bed, I only eat Georgia crackers.
Now, wait a look.
Way down upon the Swanee River.
Look, you're a little...
I'm singing Swanee song.
Well, I know what you're singing.
Show some reverence, son. Kneel down and uncover.
Now, wait a minute. Now, I wonder how Titus Moody is doing.
Howdy, Bob.
Tell me, Mr. Moody, do you have any trouble sleeping?
I only half sleep.
Half sleep?
I got short eyelids.
Well, are you the only one awake on the farm?
My cow had insomnia.
Your cow didn't sleep at all?
The bags under her eyes were so big, I didn't know which end to milk.
Let's Let's try this next door here.
No.
Oh, Mrs. Nussbaum.
You were expecting maybe Hoagy Carbuncle.
Tell me, Mrs. N., do you have trouble sleeping?
Who could sleep? Every night with his dreaming, my husband Pierre is waking me up.
He dreams, huh?
One night, Pierre is dreaming he is the lone stranger.
Yeah.
All night long, he is yelling, "Hi-ho, Silver!"
Hi-ho, Silver, huh?
Upstairs is living a Mr. Silver.
Yeah.
All night, he is yelling back, "Hi-ho, Nussbaum!"
Love that, Mrs. Nussbaum. You were expecting maybe Hoagy Carbuncle. In 1941, we also cheered Whirlaway, the four-legged wonder, with a fantastic finishing kick, who won the Triple Crown. We whooped it up for Jolting Joe DiMaggio as he hit safely in 56 straight games. Still a record. And on November the 15th, 1941, our head sports honcho at NBC, Bill Stern, talked about plans for the next year.
This coming year will be NBC's biggest year in sports. To start the new year off right, the two most important postseason football games will be broadcast exclusively over NBC. The Rose Bowl in Pasadena and the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans.
Bill only batted 500 with that prediction. The Rose Bowl game wasn't held in Pasadena. Something happened on the first Sunday in December that changed lots of plans. The Sammy Kay Show was interrupted by this bulletin.
The Japanese have attacked the Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, from the air. I'll repeat that. President Roosevelt says that the Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor in Hawaii from the air.
Pearl Harbor wasn't the only place under attack.
Hello, NBC. This is Bert Salmon speaking from Manila.
Manila has just been bombed. In fact, right now it is being bombed. And without warning, Japanese bombers started bombing Fort William McKinley, Nichols Airfield, and the RCA transmitting station.
Next day, radio brought this message to the nation.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. United States of America.
The war we'd been watching from the sidelines was now our war, too. And FDR expressed the feelings of our people with these final words.
No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory.
Our lives changed from that moment on, and so did radio.
More of NBC's First Fabulous 50 after this. Now, back to the First Fabulous 50, and host, Bob Hope.
Let's remember Pearl Harbor as we go to meet the foe.
From Pearl Harbor on, NBC Radio became wartime radio. We added to our already expanded news staff, started new programs to help sell war bonds and to get the public involved in salvage drives. Even our sports and entertainment programs were affected. Our broadcast of the Rose Bowl game came from Durham, North Carolina, where it had been moved because there was concern the Japanese might bomb the West Coast. Incidentally, soap operas were affected too.
And now we present once again Mary Noble, backstage wife. The story of a little Iowa girl who marries America's most handsome actor, Larry Noble, matinee idol of a million other women, and the story of the change war brings as Mary finds herself a war wife.
And comedians like Red Skelton develop jokes based on bundles for Britain and food rationing.
Thank you very much, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Bundles for Skelton program.
Say, Skelton, you know, I've never worked with you before.
No.
Tell me, are you a pretty good comedian?
Well, I don't know, but I'm the best they could get for 36 coupons.
And all kinds of performers took their talents to where the troops were.
Hooray! Hooray!
Miller and his orchestra toured training camps and overseas bases. Tragically, Glenn, a captain in special services, was lost when a plane he was traveling in disappeared over the English Channel. But the orchestra carried on, led by Sergeant Ray McKinley. And there were other orchestras and singers and dancers, jugglers, even comedians.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Bob. Don't ask me where I am because I don't know, and even if I did know, I couldn't tell because it's a military secret, Hope. Yes, sir. And we had a great trip over. We flew over. Didn't bother me a bit. Had a few drinks in Canada, flew blind all the way, and here we are. Well, I want to tell you, it's a thrill to be here, and I've got very little to report from home. Outside of their drafting all the leading men in Hollywood, that is the young leading men. Crosby's still there. You know, if it keeps up, most of the leading men next season will be on the adrenaline side. Can you imagine Hedy Lamarr waiting to be kissed while Lewis Stone looks around for a place to plug in his heating pad?
I remember Francis Langford helped out with the comedy and singing on that trip. And we were able to report to the folks back home about the great work our young flyers were doing when we appeared on Morgan Beatty's War News program from England. There were NBC correspondents on all the European fighting fronts, of course. North Africa, Sicily, Italy. And finally, from the invasion fleet off the Normandy beaches, on D-Day came this historic report by George Hicks.
Here we go again, another plane's come over.
They got one.
We got that one. It's got it right here.
Did we?
Yeah.
For this one? Just off our port side in the sea. The lights of that burning Nazi plane are just twinkling now in the sea and going out.
Talk about cool. That was George's middle name. And this was the same fellow who used to report the Easter Sunday parades in New York over a microphone concealed in his top hat. Came a long way from that, didn't he?
More from NBC Radio's first 50 years, right after this. NBC's first Fabulous 50, and once again, Bob Hope.
The war in Europe continued, and one of our NBC newsmen came up with another first. He went along in a bomber raid off Le Bourget airfield outside of Paris, then in the hands of the Germans, and recorded this action.
We are now flying over enemy territory. An F-119 is coming in on us.
F-119 is down.
Our guns are going. Our bomb bay doors are open.
The track is really coming up.
The sky is just black with little puffs of smoke. The bombardier just dropped his bombs, and we are leaving the field. We're taking a wide turn. I can see the Eiffel Tower.
And when Paris was finally liberated, correspondent John McVane reported it from in front of Notre Dame Cathedral.
We just came in this morning with the first correspondent, the first American car to come in with these French troops. And we've just had a big street fight here right in the square in front of the cathedral. And now all the church bells in the city are beginning. I can hear three or four more churches. And
in October that year, 1944, there was another kind of celebration on the Kraft Music Hall. Returning to his weekly radio show after entertaining our troops in France, my man Crosby was broadcasting from New York and discovered he had a surprise guest in a Hollywood studio.
Say, Bing, I suppose you know Bob Hope was in London ahead of you.
Yeah, but they're rebuilding the city.
Oh. Oh.
I heard that blub. I heard it. You can't stand there in New York and slander me, you know.
Oh, my word, we're cooked. Listen, I want to tell you something, Saggy. I picked up a hot tip from the USO folks around New York that from now on, performers will be sent to the spots that their experience best suits them for.
Yeah, well, tell me, Hydrant Head, just what does that mean?
You're slated for the Canary Islands, Bird Brain.
What's your next stop, Boys Town? Tell me, I guess you'd like to get back to France, huh?
Oh, mais oui, certainement.
Get a load of that chubby Charles Boyer. Oh, my. Look, Slagbag, did you tell the boys at the front I'll be over next year?
I did, Bob, and it was fine for morale.
No kidding.
Yeah. They all said in that case we better finish it this year.
Ah, Bing may have been kidding, but our soldiers weren't. Within 6 months, they fought their way through France, across the Rhine, and into Germany. The news was good, but on April 12, 1945, H.V. Kaltenborn brought us this news from the home front.
Good afternoon, everybody. The President of the United States died at 3:35 p.m. this afternoon in the Warm Springs environment that he loved so much.
What made the president's death even more tragic was the fact that if he had lived just a few weeks longer, he could have enjoyed the news of the victory for which he had worked so hard. NBC's W.W. Chaplin, my good friend Bill, reported the signing of the German surrender in Reims on May the 8th.
General Yodel walked straight to his place at the center of the table, threw his cap on the table, and sat down without a gesture or a word to anyone. And then the others sat down. A few quiet words from General Smith, and the sheaf of documents were laid in front of Yodel. He was handed a pen. He was told to sign. He signed. After General Yodel had signed the surrender document, it was signed by General Smith for the Western Allies, by General Prokhorov for Russia, and by General Sevres for the French. And it was done, all in 4 minutes. A war that lasted almost 6 years was ended just like that, in 4 minutes.
One war was over, and we celebrated. But only briefly. There was still the other one in the Pacific.
More from NBC Radio's first 50 years shortly. Here's Bob Hope again with more of NBC's first Fabulous 50.
As the war in the Pacific entered its final stages, NBC Radio kept our listeners informed via newscasts and bulletins and programs like the Army Hour and the Navy Hour. But even folks on the home front needed relaxation, and they got it from programs like these.
Grand Central Station. Drawn by the magnetic force of the fantastic metropolis, day and night, freight trains rush toward the Hudson River, sweep down its eastern bank for 140 miles, flash briefly by the long red row of tenement houses south of 125th Street, dive with a roar into the 2.5 mile tunnel which burrows beneath the glitter and swank of Park Avenue. And then, Grand Central Station.
After an opening like that, you hardly needed the story that followed. Then, just a short ride across town, there was more drama.
Up Broadway, into traffic jams, across 42nd Street, into the heart of theaterland. There ahead is the little theater off Times Square. Well, here we are.
Have your tickets ready, please. Have your tickets ready, please.
Good evening, Mr. First Nighter. The usher will show you to your seat.
Thank you. We'll go right in.
And how about the adventures of Sherlock Holmes, with a super sleuth portrayed by Basil Rathbone and his slightly sappy sidekick, Dr. Watson, acted by Nigel Bruce.
Ready now. I'll open the door.
You wanted me?
No, you don't. Take that.
What the...
Easy, Watson, easy.
All right, Holmes, I've got him.
Well, let's take a look at our catch.
Hi, it's Colonel Valentine Walter, Sir James's brother.
Quite. Well, sir, what have you to say for yourself? Why did you steal the Bruce Partington plans?
Who are you? What do you know about this?
I am Sherlock Holmes, and I know everything.
I don't know about that. I'll bet he didn't know how to describe punctuation the way Victor Borge could.
A period sounds like this. Here is a dash. An exclamation point is a vertical dash with a period underneath. Question mark is rather difficult to... There is a comma. Quotation are two commas. If you happen to be left-handed.
And NBC listeners at home could hear via shortwave what the island-hopping troops in the Pacific had to face in addition to the enemy.
Thank you. How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Bob Mosquito Network Hope. Thanking you boys from Guam, Tinian, and Span for making the Japs take it on the lab. Yes, sir, isn't it wonderful what you can do on Spam, huh?
Then, on August the 6th, during a Fred Waring program...
The White House has just made an important announcement on the war. And to bring you this story, we interrupt our program to take you to the NBC newsroom in Washington.
This is Ralph Howard Peterson in Washington. I have just returned from the White House, where it has just been announced that the United States is now using an atomic bomb, the most powerful explosive yet developed.
Hiroshima was destroyed. Then on August the 9th, Nagasaki. And we demanded unconditional surrender by the Japanese. On August the 14th, NBC's Max Jordan in Switzerland scooped all other newsmen with a broadcast that said the Japanese answer was on its way to the United States. And just hours later, Morgan Beatty in our Washington newsroom had a phone line open to the White House where reporters had been called in by President Truman.
It seems to me the men are coming out now. I hear loud voices. Hello, Ralph Howard Peterson at the White House. What is it? Just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, the President has just announced full acceptance of the unconditional surrender terms submitted to us by the Japanese.
On September the 1st, 6 years to the day that World War II had started, it ended. And with the Morse code for V for victory sounding, the signing of the Japanese surrender was broadcast to the world.
Attention, the peoples of the world. World War II is about to come to its official closing.
We're on the Pacific Fleet flagship USS Missouri in Tokyo Bay for the signing of the surrender of Japan.
The generals and admirals and statesmen signed the necessary papers, and then General Douglas MacArthur spoke.
Let us pray that peace be now restored to the world, and that God will preserve it always. These proceedings are closed.
And that was it. The end of the war. The end of an era. As a matter of fact, it's also just about the end of this hour of our anniversary show. So, a little gentle traveling music, Professor, please. Hey, thanks for the memory. Those great years at NBC. I'll tell you, they're happy ones for me. And full of every kind of sound, from letter A through Z. That's right, Z. Zazu Pitts was a guest once. How lovely it's been. And thanks for that top flight news of sports and interviews. The first class folks we use, like Lowell Thomas, Kaltenborn, Brinkley, Chancellor, to name a few. Hey, how thrilling it's been. And many's the joke that we've laughed at. I mean from Jack Benny, Fred Allen, George Burns, and Gracie, Ed Wynn, Eddie Cantor. They all took turns. Did I mention Bob Burns? Yes, indeed. Thanks for the memory. You know, I could go on, but there just doesn't begin to be enough time to say thanks for all the great memories NBC Radio has provided. And next week, your host will be... Hey, but let's have a bit of a quiz program here. See if you can identify this voice.
What ho there, Flab and Gab. Nice to be back on the road with you, even if it is on separate weekends.
No need to tell you who that is, right? And he might even sing a song, too. That's a warning. So you be sure to listen next week to the wonderful memories from decade number 3 here on NBC. I'll be listening along with you. This is Bob Hope. Thank you so much.
This has been the first Fabulous 50, produced by Elliot Drake and Charles Garment. Creative assistance by Warren Hogan. The first Fabulous 50 has been a production of the NBC Radio Network and NBC News. This program may not be recorded, duplicated, or rebroadcast in any manner whatsoever. Be sure to watch Bob Hope's World of Comedy on NBC TV, Friday, October 29th. This is Bill Hanrahan speaking.